Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, Republican Donald Trump was elected the 47th president of the U.S. this morning. With a win in Wisconsin, Trump cleared the 270 electoral votes needed to clinch the presidency. He has since upped that number. VP Kamala Harris called Trump today, reportedly to concede. Republicans reclaimed control of the Senate, picking up seats in West Virginia and Ohio. The House is still in play, and we will also be hearing from New York Governor Kathy Hochul shortly with her thoughts on the election. We have with us today David Lombardo from WCNY's The Capitol Press Room and our own Ian Pickus to share their thoughts and take your calls. 800-348-2551. We'll be back after the news.
First of all, I want to congratulate President-elect Trump on his victory at the polls. And commend Vice President Kamala Harris for her extraordinary run, and my good friend, fellow governor, Minnesota's Governor Tim Walz, for an incredible hard-fought campaign that really lifted up so many issues that matter to Americans. I also want to congratulate New York's newly elected and newly reelected Democratic members of Congress, as well as those who prevailed in some of our down-ballot races across the state, as well as the re-election of our senator, my great friend, Kirsten Gillibrand. We'll need all of them fighting on our behalf in Washington now more than ever. I mostly want to thank really the heart and soul of election days, the poll workers, the volunteers, the attorneys, everybody who shows up. And they really made this election go incredibly smoothly here in the state of New York. And I'm enormously proud of that, given all the potential for a different outcome. And it's thanks to them that this miracle known as an American democracy has survived every threat for nearly 250 years. I'm joining you here today with my partner in government, Attorney General Tish James, who I'll be introducing in a couple of moments. I'm joining you here today because I want to reassure all New Yorkers. And I know for many of you, this is not the electoral result you had hoped for, but I will say this. We have weathered storms before. We've overcome pandemics. We've had to, in the aftermath of tremendous job losses, create thousands of jobs. After seeing huge spikes in crime, we had to reduce the crime rate dramatically. And after losing so many jobs to overseas, we are now on the cusp of creating a new revolution, bringing more jobs back from places like China. All of this just in the last few years since I took office. That's why I have the confidence in my team and all those we work closely with that we will get through the uncertainty of a new administration in Washington. Because I said, we've done this before. We've been to this. And I will be very clear. While we honor the results of this election, and we'll work with anyone who wants to be a partner in achieving the goals of our administration in our state, that does not mean we'll accept an agenda from Washington that strips away the rights that New Yorkers have long enjoyed. I need to remind everyone, this is the birthplace of the women's rights movement, the environmental justice movement, the LGBTQ rights movement, and the American labor movement. With that as part of our history, our story, New York will remain a bastion for freedom and rule of law. And over the next coming weeks, and indeed years, I'll do everything in my power to ensure that New York remains a bastion from efforts where those rights are being denied in other states. And I will say this, one very bright glimmer of hope in our state was that New Yorkers voted overwhelmingly in support of Proposition 1. This amendment firmly establishes that reproductive freedom is an important value worth fighting for and worth protecting. And as a result of this amendment, and I want to give a lot of credit to the coalition and to many others and the elected officials and everybody who stood up to fight for these rights and overcoming an onslaught of negative, misleading ads and millions of dollars spent against it, these were the true champions who fought and persevered. I want to give credit to all of them. We'll find another occasion, not this particular day, to have a great celebration, to honor that work, and to remind everybody what this truly means. But it does mean that New Yorkers are now protected from federal actions where they try to limit contraception or IVF or abortion medication here in the state of New York once that's enshrined in our Constitution. And overall, I'm here to let New Yorkers know we stand ready to respond to any threats to our democratic process or our public safety. Now, what we're doing here is we have our New York State Intelligence Center continuing to monitor any potential threats for political violence against political figures and sensitive locations. They do this around the clock. The work is always ongoing. And I want to report that at this time, there are no threats of violence to New Yorkers. Our cyber incident response team is always vigilant to support our partners in response to any cyber threats or incidents in the aftermath of this election. And the New York State Department of State continues to work with state police to ensure that the convening of the Electoral College, which is in our state capitol, on December 17th, will be safe, secure, and as smooth as our election was yesterday. And again, I want to thank the countless individuals who are involved in ensuring this success. And we'll always protect the right of our residents' First Amendment rights. And some may feel moved to protest in the coming days, coming years. We'll respect that right, but we'll always expect New Yorkers to express themselves peacefully. And there's a couple of other actions I want to announce today. First, I created the Empire State Freedom Initiative, focused on key areas that are most likely to face threats from the Trump administration. Again, reproductive rights, civil rights, immigration, gun safety, labor rights, LGBTQ rights, and our environmental justice. Our team will do whatever we have to do to identify any possible threats to these rights that we hold dear in the state of New York and protect New Yorkers. This will include legislation, rulemaking, appropriations, and partnerships with our congressional delegation and including the Biden administration at this time. And I know we're not alone in this fight. That's why I'm so proud to stand alongside my strong partner in government, Attorney General Tish James. And beginning today, senior officials and attorneys at all levels of government will work in close collaboration with the Attorney General's office and convene regularly to coordinate these efforts and provide guidance where necessary and keep New Yorkers apprised of our efforts. Now I'll say this. President-elect Trump needs to repeal his elimination of the state and local tax deduction. He also needs to support our ongoing efforts to support our transit, support the Gateway Tunnel, the Second Avenue Subway, and fund major critical infrastructure, again, particularly the MTA, and also to back our critical economic development projects, such as those funded by the CHIPS and Science Act, which is intended to bring manufacturing back home from China and South Asia and create thousands of jobs in our state, as is occurring with Micron. And I will work with him or anybody, regardless of party, on these kind of efforts that I know will benefit the state of New York. However, if you try to harm New Yorkers or roll back their rights, I will fight you every step of the way. New Yorkers are resilient. We fought the first time around and we'll fight again. Now, I know many of you woke up today feeling drained and perhaps demoralized, yet I know we will find tremendous reserves of untapped energy within ourselves. I reflect on what football coach Vince Lombardi once said. It's not whether you get knocked down, it's whether you get back up. So today, fellow New Yorkers, we got back up. And we'll do it every single day. We'll go to work, take our kids to school, look out for our friends, our neighbors, our communities, and demonstrate through our actions that we'll always stand up for an America that respects the rights and freedoms that were envisioned and protected since the birth of our nation. Let me end with this. In New York's harbor, beneath the Statue of Liberty's outstretched torch, lies an inscription most of us are familiar with. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Fewer know the final words engraved on that plaque. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Now, perhaps you woke up today saying that that lamp doesn't shine quite as bright anymore. But I know, New Yorkers, we will meet this moment and we'll lift that lamp even higher to guard its unwavering flame and ensure the warm light of opportunity continues to reach all who dare to believe in it. That is our New York. And New Yorkers will persevere over the next 4 years. Thank you for coming today. It's important to express how strongly I feel, but also to say this. This is a great country, but our job is to make it even better. And we start here in a place like New York that has always, always been that place to push progressive values forward, protect our citizens, and fight for what's right. That's who we are as New Yorkers. Thank all of you, and may God bless our country and the great state of New York. Thank you very much.
And there you have it. New York Governor Kathy Hochul sharing her thoughts post-election of Donald Trump last night or early this morning. We're joined today here on this edition of Vox Pop by David Lombardo, host of WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, a daily public radio show focusing on state government. David has worked in and around New York politics for more than a decade, including as a Capitol reporter for the Times Union. Also with us today, because he hasn't done enough, is WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. You guys put some long hours in, and I appreciate you being here.
I'm ready to concede.
Well, concede, yes. It's almost time for Happy Nappy. But in the meantime, we'll take a few calls. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. David Lombardo, we sat here, we listened to this. What did you make of the governor's comments?
Well, I was struck by how different it was than the messaging we heard from former Governor Andrew Cuomo, who used to like to do a post-election analysis press conference. And in those press conferences, though, he would primarily use that as an opportunity to offer his own prescription for Democrats moving forward, particularly if there had been a rough night like there was in 2016, the first time Donald Trump was elected president. This was essentially a rallying cry for Democrats, something that we're going to hear a lot between now and the start of 2025 when Donald Trump is inaugurated again. The thing that I'm interested to hear more about is the Attorney General, Tish James, and how she plans on maybe going to war to a certain degree with the federal government, because it's not uncommon for state attorney generals to sue the federal government when there's someone in the White House that is of a different party.
All right. So give me a possible example of why she might sue the federal government.
So it would primarily be over executive actions that agencies might take. And there'll be an argument that something violates the U.S. Constitution or some sort of underlying statutes. This could be some sort of civil rights protections. This could be over something to do with immigration. It's hard to say at this point because we really don't know what the second Trump term will look like.
Right. Ian Pickus, we'll rehash a little bit of what happened last night, but we also have some House races that are still ongoing, and we have some news that just broke a little while ago regarding Mark Molinaro.
Yes, he is saying he will not concede the race, which was subject to an AP race call last night in the rematch with Democrat Josh Riley in the 19th district. And Riley is leading by about a point. He declared victory late Tuesday. Molinaro did not concede the race, and he put out a statement just a couple of hours ago saying that they're down 3,500 votes and there are 12,000, that is, absentee and affidavit ballots left out there. Although in the statement, he said he would accept the outcome at this point. So he's not ready to give up that seat yet, and we'll see what the outcome of the counting is.
Yeah, it sounds like he's just retaining all of the legal and other maneuvers that he can potentially utilize as they actually go about counting the paper ballots. This might mean bringing this process into court so that a judge can oversee it. It might mean that we're going to be doing a lot of challenges to ballots in the future. So at the end of the day, though, whether a candidate concedes, declares victory, that doesn't matter. What matters is what the State Board of Election ultimately certifies, and they won't be holding this process up just because Mark Molinaro hasn't conceded.
But if there were 12,000 absentee ballots to count, and he's down by how many votes?
Over 3,000. Right. I mean, that's tough sledding.
So I've covered many a paper ballot count, and when I hear 3,500 vote margin, only 12,000 absentees, I think that is pretty much impossible, because you're going to need to net 3,501. Yeah. And what's more likely to happen is that the breakdown of those absentees will be reflective of the in-person voting. There could be some skewing based on those partisan breakdowns, but I wouldn't be betting on Molinaro at this point.
Much to talk about both regionally and nationally here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number. David Lombardo from WCNY's Capitol Press Room. And, you know, Ian Pickus is here, too, because he has nothing to do. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. David Lombardo is here, and Ian Pickus. Apparently I owe you a dollar. What happened?
So when we did this 2 years ago, I took President Trump as the next Republican nominee. You took the field, and according to the calendar entry that I have for November 1st, so I won that bet.
I owe you a buck.
Yep.
Ian, can I borrow a buck?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Number here is 800-348-2551. We just heard New York Governor Kathy Hochul make some remarks post-election of Donald Trump, and they were, to some extent, very restrained, given what we have seen from previous governors. But there was a certain, I would say, restraint because maybe Trump performed a little better in New York than usual.
Yeah, Donald Trump, while not winning New York, improved dramatically from 2020. Particularly troubling for Democrats is how well he did in New York City. And I want to reiterate, though, that he only got 45% of the vote statewide. But you take a county like the Bronx, and we think of this as being overwhelmingly Democratic. And while it was, the vice president got about 70% of the vote. You would have expected her to have more like 80, 81%. And that's a story we saw nationally where as votes began to come in Georgia and North Carolina, that the vice president was trailing what Joe Biden did 4 years ago. And in those states, that actually mattered because the enrollment in the state is much closer than what we see in New York, where ultimately doing 5 points worse than Joe Biden didn't impact the 28 electoral votes.
You know, Ian Pickus, a couple of years ago, New York flipped some Republican some House seats to Republican. And at the time, there was some subtle and some more overt finger pointing toward Governor Hochul. And I'm just wondering, you know, with the results that we had, two went back, right? And there's one.
I'd say three at this point.
Three went back.
Yeah, and a fourth one was flipped earlier in the year in the special election.
So, I mean, does she have reason to be concerned about changing demographics in New York State?
I don't see how the answer couldn't be yes. You know, I asked this question to Dave actually last night during our special coverage. You know, what does Hochul have riding on this? And it's still not clear if Democrats will be able to win back control of the House as we wait for results. Exactly. It's not looking like it will go that way. And New York was key to that process. You had people like Mike Lawler, who was supposed to be in a nail biter, winning easily in his race against Mondaire Jones in the 17th district. And I think you're seeing a pattern here going back to 2022, when Governor Hochul had the closest race for a governor in a long time against Lee Zeldin. And there were key losses in the House races that year. And now this year, as Dave says, former President Trump overperforming in blue state New York. Now 2026 is looming. In the last Siena poll, Governor Hochul's approval was somewhere around 39, 40.
I wouldn't get bogged down in that number, though. We see the pendulum swing back and forth in these elections, and most likely 2026 is going to look like 2018 because there usually is pushback after there's a change in the White House. And we're also going to see likely Republican control of Congress as well. So Democrats will likely benefit from that landscape.
And maybe maybe today's not the day to look at what Democrats do next, but they're down bad.
That's right all now. That's happening, though. There's a lot of soul searching and finger pointing that also has to do with what they do next.
Well, you know, you mentioned the pendulum, and I don't want to put you on the spot here.
Please
because
do.
I don't know if you have the numbers in front of you. It's at a low point, perhaps, or was at a low point for Governor Hochul. What was the high point?
The high point was immediately after taking office, as she got to identify herself to voters in the fall of 2021. And the aftermath of that, though, has her been taking ownership for a lot of the state's problems. And thus, we've seen the highest unfavorability and lowest favorability rating that this governor has experienced in her 3 years now leading the state.
Aside from the election, the presidential election, which I think surprised a heck of a lot of people, including the pollsters.
I disagree with that. I thought the polls did an excellent job this year, both in the battleground states and here in New York.
Not where, in Iowa.
That was one pollster, but you can't pick one random poll and then take that as the consensus. You have to look at the broad field and what people are doing over and over again.
With due respect, sir, it was called razor tight for a long time, and last night was not razor tight.
So the average polling error since 1998 in battleground states is about 4 points. So that means you're within the margin of error in all of these states. So if you have an election where it's razor tight, that means someone could win by 2 or 3 points. And that's basically what we saw. When you win by 2 or 3 points in all of the battleground states, that can result in an electoral landslide like we're going to actually see, and the first GOP win in the national popular vote since 2004.
You know, David Lombardo, you're an obstreperous and argumentative type, and it's fine, but I wasn't really – that was only the setup to my question.
Sure.
My setup was, given the surprise that many had from last night in the presidential election, is there anything – and I'll ask you both – is there anything that surprised you either nationally or locally other than the presidential race last night?
I think locally I was surprised by what we talked about already, how poorly – Harris did in blue states, and how Republicans have really cemented a multicultural coalition. They've made some inroads in 2022 with Asian American voters, with Jewish American voters, as well as Spanish speaking voters. And they were able to build on that in 2024. And I think if Democrats aren't responsive to that, then I think that Republicans can continue to make inroads in states like New York. They might not be able to flip the gubernatorial election, but they could potentially win seats down ballot.
Ian.
I'm going to be puzzling forever, I think, and I don't know that we'll know an answer. Did Kamala Harris, the vice president, and we should say we'll hear her concession speech today live on WAMC at 4, did she come closer than President Biden would have had he stayed in the race? I'm thinking about people like Pat Ryan, who won re-election last night, who said President Biden, after that debate, is taking us down if he stays in the field. And that is what happened to the Democratic Party regardless yesterday. And I would love to know what the delta is between those two possibilities.
It's hard to imagine that President Biden could have maintained the presence on the campaign that we saw Harris have once she became the nominee. And again, there's no way to really prove this until maybe exit polls come out in greater depth. But it's hard to imagine that Biden would have done a better job than she did.
I agree with you. So the question is, was it too late for him to go? Should that have happened a year earlier?
Well, I mean, not just a year earlier. I think that there should have been, from the onset, this idea that you are a one-term candidate, that you are a bridge to future Democrats in the White House, and there should have been an open primary. There is this fear Democrats have about a fight for a nomination and that it will somehow hurt them in the aftermath of that. I think those fears are overblown, and I think that when you have a competitive primary, you typically pick the best candidate, which is what we saw in 2020 when there was a competitive primary on the Democratic field, and they got the person who could beat Donald Trump. 2016, there wasn't necessarily the same competition. There was some challenge to Hillary Clinton from Bernie Sanders, but not the robust field that we saw in 2020.
We're joined today by David Lombardo from WCNY's Capitol Press Room and WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. The number to call here is 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. James writes in, well, one issue that seems to have been forgotten by the media is how the Republicans responded to Trump's lie about the 2020 election having been stolen. Red states all over the country have been changing laws and putting rules in place so as to give themselves an advantage, from gutting the landmark voting rights legislation to banning the passing out of water bottles to those standing in line to vote. Republicans have many laws in place to help themselves cheat. Could such unfair advantages perhaps have helped Trump win? What do you guys think? And that's from James.
I think if you're going to claim that those changes in red states or purple states gave Donald Trump an advantage, then it doesn't explain why Donald Trump did better in New York, where things went the other way and there have been efforts to make voting even easier. So I think a lot of those concerns are overblown, but I love any time we can criticize the media for their failure to accurately cover Donald Trump.
Well, we're going to get another 4 years of that, no question. You know, one point here, and I think it is important, in 2020, President Trump raised a lot of doubt about embracing mail-in and early voting. And this time he did not do that. So if you were a Trump supporter in 2024 and you voted early as opposed to being disinclined because your standard bearer said not to the last time, that may have been an advantage.
You know, I heard one of the commentators on the roundtable panel this morning. They did kind of a look back on what had gone on during the election this morning over at the Linda. And one of them said, you know, a lot of Trump faded down the stretch. And this was this guy's opinion. Trump faded down the stretch and became more nebulous, did the weave, as he called it, more and more. And a lot of people had mailed their votes in already in advance of this decline or whatever you want to call it, whatever this guy perceived it to be. Do you think that the early voting can, in fact, have that detrimental effect?
You know what? I would say in a local race where maybe you don't know that much about the candidates, sure. If you got to the last 2 weeks in, you know, sort of year nine of Trump being a national, everyday dominant figure and something could still change your mind, that's surprising to me.
Polls typically show that people who vote early or vote by mail are the people who know who they want to vote for and have typically made up their mind well in advance. And it's those election day voters who are the ones who are not really deciding until someone hands them a ballot. So how things go down the stretch might not necessarily be impacted by early voting or absentee voting.
Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you, joined by News Director Ian Pickus here at WAMC and David Lombardo from WAMC, WCNY's the
Capitol. I'll come join you, Ray.
Listen, you've been on so often.
We're excited to announce that I'm coming on.
We're merging WCNY's the Capitol Press Room. All right, let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. We begin in Cohoes. RK, you're up.
Raymond, gentlemen, how are you?
Hey.
Hi.
Raymond, I have to make an apology if you permit me. I was a little cranky to your call screener. I'm on no sleep.
Okay.
I'm on no sleep.
Us too.
And I have to get that out there.
Okay.
And you know, when I heard the music at 2 o'clock and you came on, I was hoping okay, he's gonna be like, you know, and it's birds today.
No.
Birds.
You know what?
I've never watched a bird. Raymond, I've never watched a bird, but after all of this, I think I'm going to start.
Really? Well, I don't dig doing political shows. I got to be honest with you. Only election time do I do that. I much prefer to have things we can all agree on because, you know, there's a lot about politics nobody agrees on. Anyway, what's on your mind, buddy?
And that's why Raymond, that's why I love you, and that's why everybody loves you. But anyway, I have a very simple answer to all of this bewilderment, all this prognostication as to how could this all happen. And it's very simple. The American people are not stupid. They're not stupid. They saw through all of this. They saw through all of these things being said about this guy. A lot of stuff coming from your network, won't mention any names, but we all know. And they saw through it. And this was one of the greatest acts of democracy. I'm not that old, I'm old enough, that I have ever seen, that people were able to see through it all and say, no, this is all a bunch of nonsense. It's all a bunch of lies.
Interesting.
And it was white, black, brown, men, women, gay, straight, trans, the untrans. It was an incredible coalition of Americans coming together, exercising their right to vote. And I just think it was tremendous.
Ian Pickus.
And I really hope that.
Well, go ahead, RK.
No, not just really hope that we can all come together and then just get back to birds. That's all I have.
You know, here's the thing.
Thanks, Raven.
Thanks,
RK. The thing is, okay, this is the system. So the votes count, and that was the election we had, and we have a winner. That's the way it's set up. The things that were said about Donald Trump over the past 9 years are not lies. They just weren't a deal breaker for a huge section of the country yesterday in very important states and in other states where he made inroads.
Yeah, there's this narrative that I think is important to think about, which is that an election can be a referendum. And I think if Harris was the presumptive winner right now, I think we would view the election as a referendum on Trump and not necessarily an endorsement of Harris and her policies. Instead, though, we're looking at President-elect Trump, which I think indicates that this election was a referendum on Biden and his administration and people saying, I'm fed up with the last 4 years. I don't like what's been happening. I might not necessarily like Trump, but it's time for a change. So I think that this is more of an election on what people think about the last 4 years under Joe Biden.
There was some indication from exit polling, and I don't have them in front of me, that younger people, 18 to 25, maybe not a majority of them, but they skewed much higher for Trump this year than the last time or the time before that. What do you fellas make of that? And then we'll take a break.
Yeah, the former president had an interesting gambit where he was actually making a play primarily for male Gen Zers, so to speak. And there was some skepticism that this was a meaningful gambit, that these people are baked into the Democratic establishment. And I think what we're going to see as we dive more into these numbers is that, much like a lot of the other trends, he made some inroads into this demographic. He obviously didn't win the, say, 18 to 24 vote by any meaningful margin. But again, death by 1,000 cuts if you're a Democrat.
Yeah, I mean, the winning formula today is to limit the damage in your vulnerable places, whether that's a geographic area or with a specific group. You know, if you can conserve 3 or 4 points, then that's a winning formula if you're looking at, you know, just a few thousand votes in some cases. So, yeah, I mean, I saw the same thing you did, and it's notable. They, you know, we and maybe because the personalities are different, but we heard a lot about how loath young people were to vote for Joe Biden a second time.
Yeah.
Now we have elected the oldest president ever. They're different in how they present, but the fact is he is 78.
Let's take a quick break here. Ian Pickus joins us from WAMC, David Lombardo from WCNY, and we're here to take your calls at 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Ray Graff. It's David Lombardo. It's Ian Pickus. It's you at 800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. One quick email question and then back to the phones. Nate writes in, why is it against the law to wear political memorabilia when you vote, but they hold signs outside the voting area? What's the difference? That's from Nate.
It could be a difference without a meaningful distinction, Raymond. But again, there's an idea that you don't want to influence or pressure people. And so the idea of a threshold being set is what's supposed to keep people fair and balanced and the sanctity of the voting booth preserved.
Yeah, you want to add anything there, smart guy?
Great job, Dave. You know, whatever you want to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, great job, Dave.
Great job, Dave. All right, let's go to the phones. Sonny in Orange County. Sonny, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I've got a I got two questions, if I may.
Sure.
One is, I think maybe you guys are afraid to tackle this issue. Or nobody,
I'm only afraid of heights, Sonny. I'm only afraid of heights.
Okay. I'm not, but I am a little bit too. But could it possibly be that race and gender has something to do with it? One. The second question I have is, I thought a felon could not vote.
Okay, that's a good.
I'll leave it to you guys.
We'll take them both. Hang on the line here a minute, Sonny. Hang in there.
Okay.
Let's do the easy one first. I think it's easy. The second question.
I'll take the first one first.
Okay, you go on with the first one.
How could you not say yes to that? I mean, we don't know because it's never happened. We have not elected a woman. We've had, he'll be the 47th president with two repeats now. We have not had that happen yet as a country. And a couple of the races, as Dave says, where we did have a female nominee, were down to the margin of error in some key states. How could it not be a one-point factor, maybe? I mean, it's hard to prove. People aren't going to say, well, most people aren't going to say, I definitely would never vote for a woman. But we've had one black president. We've had zero women. Yeah, I think the answer is yes.
David, what do you think?
I think it definitely impacts the decisions that some voters are making. But again, when we talk about demographics and decisions, say on the racial front, 20% of black men, according to exit polls, voted for Donald Trump. So is their vote then based on misogyny and not racism? And then the women who voted for Trump, are they racist and not sexist? So I think race and gender obviously enters into this, but it's hard to really understand the final impact. And on the second thing you brought up about being a convicted felon, so the rules for, say, voting vary state to state based on a criminal conviction, and it can be whether you previously had a felony conviction or whether you are currently, say, behind bars for a felony conviction. But as far as I'm aware, in New York State, for example, you can still serve and be elected if you have a felony record. There are state assembly members who has a felony conviction and has since been elected to the assembly.
Sonny, you want to follow up?
Yeah, it's just and to even serve in the White House. I mean, I couldn't even get a job to work in the White House lawn if I have a felony conviction. But we could elect the president.
This is a brave new world. I mean, we've never seen this before. There's no question about it. And as we're speaking, there's news that the special counsel is going to be wrapping up the outstanding cases.
Now, what do you mean wrapping up? In other words, dismissing them?
Well, it's come to a conclusion. Is they'll either say, hey, we've got some findings. They'll basically release their final report.
All right, Sonny, you want to put a bow on it before we move on?
Well, yeah. I mean, we know definitely that this was about him staying out of prison. You know, whether we want to admit it or not. And he definitely is, because every shred of evidence is going to disappear. I don't know. What do you guys think about Letitia James? How does she proceed from this point on?
That's a great question. And she was actually on with Governor Hochul, and we jumped into the show here. And so I did not hear what Tish James said. But guys, if you've seen any text on this, go ahead.
So Letitia James, in her comments after the governor spoke, went on to list all of what New York under her tenure did to stymie President Trump's executive actions from 2019 to 2020. And she articulated this idea that we've been here before and we will approach this presidency the same way we did in the past, and that we know how he does things, and that they've developed so-called contingency plans for how to, say, bring lawsuits in the future.
Hey, Sonny, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551. That's the number. WAMC News Director Ian Pickus is here. What time did you get out of here last night? I got about 10:30, 10:45, but you were still here.
It was after that, but, you know, I didn't stay as late as some years, and I also missed Dave's call at 12:30.
Oh, really?
So I haven't had a chance to ask him.
What happened?
Well, I call Ian, and I know that his phone normally goes to ignore his calls after 10, but if you call it again, you can get through, but he didn't pick up.
That's
so
true.
So how long have you been harassing him over the phone?
Over the phone? Yeah. I mean, for 10 to 20 years.
That's disturbing. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Blaze in Troy is on. Blaze, you're on.
Well, this is the Three Wise Men with Ray, Ian, and
I know Blaze.
Yes.
I know Blaze, too, right?
Yeah, been former a guest WNC of the, intern.
Yes.
Guest of Capital Press Room.
How you doing, man? What's happening?
I am what I am today. That's how I feel about the election. And I was flashing back yesterday to when I was helping out in the newsroom with the 2012 election. Good times.
That's a long time ago.
Yes, it was. I'm really concerned about what this has in terms of an impact for marginalized communities, people with disabilities, LGBTQ plus, and other marginalized communities. It's just amazing to me how we, and I say we as a country, elected a president who has, basically kind of preached eugenics here in terms of only the strong survive. And I'm just so worried that we're going to be going back to a really dark time here. I'm worried, frankly, and I'd love to, get your feelings about this. Am I overstating it? Am I, being irrational? And, I'm just so thrilled to catch up with you guys.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you, and it's nice to have a little therapy session on the air. All right, Ian, what do you think?
You know, Blaze, I think the way that I am hearing what you're saying, it's pretty common today. We've heard a lot of it. But what you're hearing, at least in the Northeast, there have been press conferences so far by Connecticut's governor and attorney general and senior senator. And we just had in New York the governor and the attorney general. And I know in the last hour, Governor Maura Healey, who's a former attorney general, did the same thing, reiterating that they're going to fight to retain rights that might be under threat in the new administration. So much like after 2016, I think if you live in a blue state, it's possible your experience of the next few years might be different than it otherwise would be, just because it naturally sets up sort of the token opposition.
Yeah, Blaze, you're a savvy political follower. You know that there are some issues where the state really takes predominance, and there are issues where the federal government takes the cake, so to speak. And on those state issues, I don't think there's going to be much of a change. On the federal level, though, I think if you're trying to get a sense of what comes next, I would look at some of the one House bills that House Republicans passed under Speaker Mike Johnson, because they're likely to have GOP control of the House and Senate and the White House. And so those are the things that lawmakers in D.C. are going to prioritize. So I think about the immigration bill that they successfully moved through the House and obviously didn't pass the Senate. But what has been done in the past is likely to be the first set of priorities that Republican leaders in D.C. take up on in 2025.
Either way, Blaze, one day at a time, my friend. Stay calm, stay cool. Thank you very much. 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number. I'm still a little miffed I owe Lombardo a buck here, and I'm gonna have to find that money somewhere.
Should be more than a dollar with Biden's inflation at this point.
All right, so it'll be $47. Let's go to Simsbury, Connecticut. Paul, you're on.
Guys, I'll make an observation statistics-wise and then get some feedback. I heard the statement made about within the margin of error, and he's 100% right. And I go at this with people all the time. Not that I'm a statistician, but I did get an A in multivariate statistics.
Well, congrats.
And I wouldn't be. I studied hard. It's memorization of formulas. And the fact of the matter is that any reasonably sound statistician, especially with software today and so forth, can design the appropriate cross tabs and cuts, whether it be religion, age, ethnic background, and so forth. Any reasonable statistician. Then the next thing is a strict sampling approach that doesn't deviate with opinion. You only will train people to get whatever your criteria is, without regard to whether it's a presidential election or who's going to win the Breeders' Cup Classic, which I hit. So the deal is...
There's your dollar.
The deal is that all these entities make money and keep the thing going, just like Dick Morris, I heard on a show, talk about all the people who were promoting both sides, you know, billions of dollars spent on elections, like in Texas or whatever.
Yeah.
So when you look at the average person and they get polling data, they have no clue what I just said. Okay. I'm pretty confident of that. I'm an educated guy.
Got an A in that class.
Don't you think that if you went back, and I'm 66, and maybe the data's out there, I didn't Google it yet, we've gotten to the point where we've never had more poll cuts in the ever, and even maybe during the Kennedy regime back in 60 against Nixon, I think it was. I get mixed up.
That's right.
Yeah, it was with the dog. That they didn't have all these people doing these polls and then rating them. And I even saw online somebody said, we were really accurate in 2020. And I go, oh, then that means you had one race in 2022. You see my point? In other words, we put these people in the framework of the second coming, if you believe in that stuff, Jesus, like I do. And then people say, well, they were off. Ultimately, the logic would be that given the way that people register in the layout of this country, there are going to be within a margin of error, except for maybe Reagan the second time around. You see my point, kind of?
All like, right, let's see what David says about
it.
So, yeah, you have these battleground states, like you're saying, where, yes, it is predictable that the polls should be in the margin of error. And I think the bigger problem is how the media goes about covering polls. And I think a lot of that stems from the fact that we didn't get an A in that class.
It's also laziness. It's very easy to do that.
I think, though, there's a misunderstanding about how to frame polls by the media. We're not good at taking a 52-48 horse race and reminding people that that is essentially a tie. We frame it as four-point lead, and people run it with that. So I think we need to do a better job of how we cover polls and set people's expectations about what polls can tell us. Because the other thing is, they are a snapshot in time. So if you take a poll in July where someone might be leading, that does not necessarily reflect what's going to happen 4 months later.
Paul, and along those lines, you know, with all the prediction markets that exist now, I think we learned the first time that Trump won that a 65% chance does not mean you're winning 65-35.
Yeah, like I have a 700 batting average in slow pitch softball, but I still get out 3 out of every 10 times.
So when you come up, it doesn't mean you're beating the pitcher 70-30 that time.
Right.
And from what I understand, you don't do that well.
He does.
No, I do.
Really?
Very well.
He does okay?
Definitely. Yes.
Really? That's not what I heard. Mike in Saratoga writes in, to me, this is simple. The American public is not sophisticated enough to understand the economic crisis that happened during the pandemic. So they blame Biden. What Biden did is nothing short of amazing as far as the economy goes, but it wasn't enough because we weren't back to normal. And that's from Mike.
Is it fair to say, and I think it probably is, that the facts are sort of secondary? You know, I think Trump has shown us his messaging is legendary and he connects with people on an emotional level. And people never, like, if you ask someone, you know, do you have enough money? The answer is never going to be yes.
But when you think about something like the question of how the economy is doing, that can mean different things to different people based on the metrics that you're using. And if you're going to point to, say, the number of jobs that are available but are ignoring the cost of goods in the supermarket, then you're not talking to voters the same way that they're living their lives. And I think if you accept this idea that Democrats did do a good job on the economy over the last 4 years, which is potentially debatable, I think then everyone should agree that Democrats did a bad job on their messaging. And that's one of the things we're seeing right now in their soul searching is this idea that we need to do a better job of appealing to the working class. But what that actually looks like in the next 2 to 4 years remains to be seen.
Kevin in Greenfield writes in, RK, that was one of our earlier callers, is so full of it his eyes are brown. Well, that's nice, Kevin. Kevin goes on, very few, if any, of the people in the groups he named would vote for Trump because of the charges against him. 20 million less Democratic votes yesterday compared to 2020. Something stinks. And that's from Kevin in Greenfield. All right, well, I think with that in mind, we'll go to East Hampton. George, you're on.
Yeah, hi. So needless to say, I'm very disappointed. Do you think that there's going to be any kind of look at what really went on? Because to me, in almost every state, including blue states, it was a margin. He won with an extra margin where he didn't even win in blue states, but a margin of 1 to 2%. He's got Elon Musk with him, and he's possibly got technology. Is there any way that they cut into this vote? And also, let's not forget, a month ago, Trump said that don't even worry about voting. You don't even have to vote because the fix is in. What do you think about that?
I wouldn't presume to make an assumption that there was anything nefarious in the administration of Tuesday's elections. And I think a lot of the rhetorical talking points that you're grasping to sound similar to things that Donald Trump said in the aftermath of the 2020 election, and things that some of his supporters said, and some of the things that Fox News has been sued for with regards to the sanctity of voting machines. So I think that people who trusted the process in 2020 should trust the processes that are in place in 2024. And in cases where there are very close elections, there are some mechanisms for automatic hand recounts of paper ballots, which may or may not shed some light on how close elections actually were.
All right, George. Ian, you want to mention anything to go with that? We're about out of time.
You know, I would just say that our staff, while I have a second, worked really, really hard to bring this election to you. And whatever the outcome was, whether people listening were happy or not, we were on air last night and we were all over the Northeast. And the job is to bring you the information. Our ability to influence outcomes is not what's at stake here.
Hmm. All right. Well, fair enough. Now, David Lombardo, how do people find you on the radio and the TV?
So you can find the Capitol Press Room at capitalpressroom.org, and you can listen to our show by wherever you go to get your favorite podcasts. And then once a month, you can turn on your PBS station and find me hosting Connect New York.
Do you wear a suit?
I do wear a suit for that.
Good for you. Now, I would say that plug that you just did is worth at least $1. So let's call it even, right?
Sounds great.
Ian Pickus, it's time, happy nappy time now. You're almost done.
I got to catch up to Dave's on base percentage, so that's where I'm going next.
All right. Hey, listen, thanks, fellas. And up next, by the way, it's 51%. Just a note before we get out of here that this week's episode was produced before we knew the results of Tuesday's election. 51% is coming up. Support comes from the VNA and Hospice of the Southwest region, providing home health and hospice care since 1946 throughout Bennington, Franklin, and Rutland counties. VermontVisitingNurses.org. And Old Songs Concerts, presenting Can Trip, Saturday, November 9th at 7:30 p.m., live and streaming, concerts.oldsongs.org. Once again, thanks to David Lombardo and Ian Pickus for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Apologies if we did not get to your call. I'm not going to say we're going to do this topic again for a while, but...
See in 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it'll be worth $2 by then. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leon screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. All right, RK and Cahoes, dig it, man. We're off the politics tomorrow. Tomorrow at 2 p.m., it's the Science Forum.